compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back, and we're back in action. Let's get this road show back on the road. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Steve in Mercerville? Yeah, Mercerville, New Jersey.
Hi, Patrick. Please excuse my raspy voice visit today. I'll try to make my point and get to my question as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Because this is Veterans Day, I wanted to just say how much I love the life advice from members of the World War II generation that you shared on Monday. And it got me to thinking about my dad and all of the other people of that generation who made such huge personal sacrifices at home and overseas to help support the war effort.
Uh-huh.
And now we have this pandemic, and President Trump correctly described it as a war with an invisible enemy. But despite the accuracy of that description and all of the death and disability that we've seen, it just makes me so sad that we live in a world where so many people now here and in other countries absolutely refuse to do anything that's even slightly inconvenient or uncomfortable to help fight this great war of our generation. And I'm not talking about the more draconian, overreaching vaccine mandates. I'm talking about people who become so outraged if they're told to do something as simple as wearing a mask on an airplane or in a crowded public building, or to experience the momentary discomfort of getting tested regularly if they work or gather in places where there could be a lot of vulnerable people.
Well, Steve, though, isn't it, I mean, in my experience, it's the vast majority of people who are more than willing to do those things. Seems to me that the people you're describing are very much in the minority, percentage-wise, anyway.
Yeah, you're right. They are in the minority, but it's I think there are still quite a few more than there were during World War II era, and it just seems like a lot of people have totally lost the values that our parents' generation taught us, such as, you know, service and prudence and sacrifice for the common good.
I understand the point you're making, Steve, and I don't dispute that. But I think where we have to take something else into account is when you see the people, let's say the Gavin Newsoms and the Nancy Pelosi's and the Dr. Fauci's and others who are out there beating the drum, insisting that everybody wear a mask and you're killing people if you don't wear a mask and you're selfish if you don't wear a mask. Okay, that may or may not be the case. But when we see them, when they think they're off camera and we see them peeling that mask off or going to these gala events or restaurants or other places where they don't think anybody's watching, getting their hair done, and they're not wearing masks in the same kind of situations that they demand that everyone else wearing a mask should wear one, I mean, it's naturally going to have the effect on people saying, well, why are you making me wear a mask when you don't wear a mask? Why are you making me wear a mask because it's so important? Apparently, it's not that important. It's not that effective if you're not wearing a mask. So human nature being what it is, Steve, there's just so much of that stuff. There's so much of the chicanery that's gone on around masks and other things that I don't blame some people, quite frankly, for saying, why do I have to do something that you're not willing to do? I think it's a reasonable question, and we've not seen any good answers to that question, if you ask me.
I agree with you about the hypocrisy. But I think we also have to use our own individual common sense and say, just because my neighbor is doing something ridiculous doesn't mean that doesn't negate the need for me to be prudent.
Well, I see your point, and I can accept that as well. I don't dispute that. But to a deeper level, I guess what I'm really driving at is the message that if you wear this mask, you're going to somehow prevent other people from getting the disease or you won't get the disease. It has the appearance of being patently untrue because you see the people who are making that case themselves, putting themselves and others at risk, quote unquote. In other words, it seems to refute the credibility of that message. So to come back to the idea of being prudent, if indeed it really is prudent to wear a mask, and I'll leave that to the scientists to decide, that's one thing. But if your elected officials and other people demonstrate by their own behavior that it really isn't necessary to wear a mask, then you're naturally going to say, well, then why do I have to wear a mask? Why does my kid have to wear a mask in school when these people, when they think no one's looking, they don't wear masks? So it gets to the heart of the question of the message itself. Is it really, in fact, prudent to do something that, by appearances anyway, the people who seem to know better, they're not doing it? That's what I'm driving at. It's more than just hypocrisy. It destroys their credibility.
Yes, you're right. And there's a lot of that going on, and it drives me crazy. Now, I see the same thing happening, and I fault them for doing that, and it makes me nuts because it has the effect that you're describing exactly. Mm-hmm. But I have probably 5 or 6 physicians in my family, and their political views range from extremely liberal to extremely conservative. But the one thing they've all been in agreement on this whole time are the safety measures that have been recommended, despite the bad examples that have been set by public officials. Mm-hmm. And they are so frustrated with the people who, if you don't want to get the vaccine, at least wear a mask, at least try to stay away from vulnerable people. And I was actually hospitalized at the peak of the pandemic last November and December. With something unrelated. It was a surgical complication.
Okay.
And every single healthcare worker I interacted with was so extremely frustrated with people who were just poo-pooing the pandemic and not taking the safety measures. Some of them even said to me privately that they felt that if you ignore all the safety measures and you get COVID, you should have to go to the back of the line if you come to the hospital. I mean, that's how upset they were and how frightened they were for their own health and safety and then that of their patients. So I don't think, even though you are absolutely correct about the bad message that it sends when we see hypocrites recommending masks and not wearing them, I don't think common sense tells most people that the hypocritical actions of others negate the basic scientific and medical realities.
Yeah, fair enough. And once again, I first of all, I appreciate your calm approach to the topic, and I concur with the point you're making. The only little addendum I would make, Steve, and this is not to argue with you at all, but just to say the next step beyond that is the mask itself actually really necessary? And that, I believe, is where there's further ground to till. My view of it is that if these people who really do know, they've been briefed, they have the science at their fingertips, not to mention, say Dr. Fauci himself as an example. My sense is that their failure to wear a mask when they think no one's looking, you're right, it is hypocrisy. It's true. But I think there's another step beyond that, and that is that they know, or you could put it this way, the average person looking at that will assume that they know it's not really necessary. Because if they really did believe it was necessary, they wouldn't recklessly not wear the mask. So the president of France and Angela Merkel, the former chancellor of Germany, or I guess she's on her way out, I was watching some video of these heads of state that were going to this meeting in Davos recently. And when they're outside and all the cameras are on, they're wearing their masks. And then you see another camera angle where they come into this large building at the airport, wherever it was. And as they come in, the president of France, the chancellor of Germany, and the high and mighty, as soon as they come in and there's no more bank of cameras, they peel that mask off immediately. And they're shaking hands and they're talking to each other face to face, up close and personal, because they don't think anybody sees that they're taking their masks off. So all I'm asking you to consider is that when you see that, these are people who they're well briefed. They have the information at their fingertips. So my presumption is they don't really think the masks are necessary, which is why they don't wear them. If they did think the masks were necessary, they would wear them because they don't want to die. And they would wear it just for their own protection. But the fact that they don't suggests to me that they know better. And yet they want everyone else to wear a mask. So I think the people who you're referring to, and I'll give you the last word, I promise. But I think the people that you're referring to, the ones who don't want to wear a mask or something, I think it's more than just simple stubbornness. It's not just that they're being stubborn or they're being cranky or they don't like liberals, or I think it goes beyond that. I think it's that they have figured out that by virtue of this hypocritical way of acting among the others, that those people who have access to this information, they realize these masks are not necessary. Therefore, if they're not going to wear it, why do I have to wear it? I'll give you the last word on this, Steve.
Well, I think that's a perfectly logical assumption, but it is an assumption, and assumptions can be dangerous. And I think we've seen the evidence with the resurgence of the Delta variant here and the overwhelming of our hospitals and the way that the virus is resurging now in Europe and elsewhere, where they initially relaxed things perhaps more than they should have. That we really don't know enough at this point to be any more reckless than we absolutely have to be, you know, to take unnecessary chances. And if it's not going to kill you to wear the mask until we have more data, if you're not too worried about the vaccine, if you can deal with a Q-tip in your nose every now and then to get tested, you know, what's the harm? And possibly there's a lot of benefit.
I would love to converse with you about this at length, Steve. You're a very thoughtful man. I appreciate it very much. But if I raise my next point, then we'll be talking. I want to make sure you do have the last word. Hey, if you don't mind a personal question before we go, I mean, your voice sounds steady, but it sounds like maybe you're still recovering from your illness. Are you doing okay? Are you feeling good?
I'm doing much better, thanks. Yeah.
That's good.
Get into all those details, but it's not COVID related, thank God.
That's fun. Well, I hope you make a full recovery, and I'm glad you called today, Steve. Thank you. Let's go now to Rhonda in Texas. Hi, Rhonda.
Oh, caught me off guard. Sorry. Hi. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
One comment for the previous man. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say, "Do as I say, not as I do."
Which I would say is sort of the essence of subpar parenting. No offense to your mom.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's another story for another day. I have a problem with my not just my oldest sister, but my remaining sister. She's quite liberal and what I would call stinking thinking, but she's been into this reeky, what she calls dance moves. And when I asked her to explain it to me, she says, "I'm not going to debate that with you." And the tone and manner in which she said it, I knew not to pursue it with my tone against hers. So I had to ask some other off-the-wall question to try and get around that. But one of the things she doesn't like is to talk politics or religion. And I thought, well, maybe I could send her that book that you've mentioned. I could send her the article from the USCCB. I don't know how to approach this anymore because she's taught at a university which is quite liberal, and those ideas seem to be sinking in along with the Black Lives Matter movement and everything else has just
What's
changed
the sticking
her
point?
Completely.
What's the sticking point? What's the issue that you and she are at odds over?
I can't talk to her about our religion and what is proper and not accepted, and that she shouldn't be doing this Reiki thing, that she should be pursuing things that are for the greater good of God, not for, you know.
So it sounds like she's sort of lost her faith, or she's in the process of losing her faith, and you're an irritant to her because you talk about things that she doesn't really want to think about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. When I visit her back in 2015, she lives in another state, 1,200 miles away. And I'm not of the physical capability to do traveling anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, but I would bring my divine office, and boy, did I get hounded for that, because I brought this book with me, and I had things highlighted and underlined for a funeral for one of my other sisters. And
so the fact that you had the fact that you had the Liturgy of the Hours, and you weren't asking her to read it, you were just having it for yourself, that offended her?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my thinking whenever I'm faced with a situation like this is, why push it? Why not just withdraw gracefully and let it ride? You know, if she's that fragile and gets angry that quickly over something as innocuous as you having a book that you like, why subject yourself to that? You know, why go there if that's what, I mean, I don't know if you're going there, if she's going to you, but why put yourself in that situation?
Well, see, my birthday was Tuesday, so we were talking because it was my birthday. We don't talk that often.
My sense, I've got to take a break. I appreciate it, Rhonda. My sense of it is, if there's no compelling reason to, you know, to put yourself in the situation, I wouldn't do it. I would just pull the plug and, you know, maybe have a nice conversation by phone every so often, but life's too short. And if it's causing you heartburn and you're not getting anywhere with her, then I would just go my merry way. Honestly, that's what I'd suggest. God bless you, Rhonda. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now on Relevant Radio.
And we're back, just like that. Some toe-tapping music. Let's go to Malcolm in Cranston, Rhode Island. Malcolm, they tell me you're 11 years old. Is that right?
Yes.
Welcome to the program. What would you like to talk about?
I just want to talk about how, like, people become saints.
Yeah, and that's something we're all called to do. We're all called to become saints. So the simple answer, I guess, is that you love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, as Jesus said, and then you love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said those are the two greatest commandments. So if you love God with all your heart and with all your mind and all your strength, that would include doing the things that you know God wants you to do, like be honest and be respectful and obey your parents. Now, when you get to be older, you won't be under your parents' authority, but you still have to do those things, you know, be a good person, tell the truth, be virtuous, etc. Help other people, you know, help the poor people, do what you can to assist other people who need things. When you find out what God wants you to do with your life, whether it's to become a priest or to get married, let's say, well, then you do your very best at that. Be a good husband, good father. Teach your children well, just like your parents are doing for you. And that's how you become a saint. You do these things that Jesus asks you to do. You also stay away from the things that you know you're not supposed to do. So don't get involved in drugs. Don't become a liar, things like that. You know, and there are other things too, but eventually you'll know more about that. But the main thing is you don't do the things that God doesn't want you to do because they're harmful to you. You do the things that God wants you to do, honesty, helping other people, etc. And you just live your life that way. And people who live their lives that way become saints.
Okay.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
And you know what's the best part about it? Is that everybody, including you and including me, we can all become saints. Sometimes we get distracted, though, and other things, you know, get our attention and pull our attention away from God. So just keep focused on God and the things of God and be happy and enjoy life and do good things and don't do bad things. And before you know it, you'll be a saint.
Okay.
Receive the sacraments. I should have mentioned that too. You've already made your first Holy Communion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the next sacrament that's coming for you sometime soon will be confirmation. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and what's really great about confirmation is that the graces that you received in baptism are supercharged. They're made even stronger when you receive the sacrament of confirmation. So it helps you to live your Catholic life as a follower of Jesus. It helps you live that even more effectively. So that'll be another great sacrament that you'll receive. And, you know, a little bit about the sacraments. Obviously, you want to receive Jesus in Holy Communion as often as you can. That's really important. That's like building spiritual muscle. You get stronger that way. And if you fall into sin, you want to be sure to go to confession. That's another sacrament that's there to help you stay strong. So stay close to Jesus in the sacraments and pray the rosary. Ask Our Lady to help you. These are all the things that saints do. And if we just follow their example, we'll become saints too.
Okay.
What grade are you in?
I'm in
fifth grade. Sounds like your phone's acting up a little bit. Well, enjoy fifth grade. It's a beautiful time of life. Do tell your mother that I said thank you for letting you call me, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Malcolm. Great call. I love hearing from the young people. Cyrus, we've got some audio we want to get to here. Actually, a couple of audios that we want to get to. Let's lay them out and see what we've got here.
Okay. One that I wanted to get to, you have a story on your big pile there about how it looks like
the illegal aliens.
The Biden administration wants to pay illegal aliens. And so I'd like to learn a little bit more about that.
Okay, for sure. Let's do that. So I'll set that one up. Members of Congress, this is from the Washington Times. Members of Congress who die in office customarily have a year's salary, currently $174,000, as a payout to their survivors. Family of U.S. service members who die on active duty get a $100,000 death gratuity. Japanese Americans forced out of their homes and into internment camps for more than 2 years during World War II collected $20,000 payments 4 decades later. That's worth about $46,000 in today's dollars. Lawmakers and legal experts are looking at those kinds of payments as the Biden administration considers cutting $450,000 checks, nearly 10 times the inflation-adjusted rate paid to internees, to compensate illegal immigrants who say they suffered emotional trauma from family separations as a result of President Trump's zero-tolerance border policy. One legal expert characterized the $450,000 checks as quite generous compared with, I think that's putting it mildly, $450,000. Has anyone ever given you a $450,000 check for anything, Cyrus?
No.
Well, what if you told them that you suffered emotional trauma and therefore you should get $450,000?
Okay.
Try it.
Yeah. Where do I sign up?
Yeah, really. So there's a massive disparity there, obviously. This whole article gets into not only the legal precedent behind this, paying reparations and things, but we're talking about people who came up through the border with Mexico into this country, came up illegally, undocumented workers, call it what you want, but that situation. And in some cases, when there was separation of the children from their parents, there was a question about, are these in fact their parents? Could these be human traffickers? And there are plenty of those people in there who are posing as parents of the children that they have in tow. And it turns out later that they were sex traffickers. And these children were, in essence, sex slaves. And so they were separated from these children until the government, you know, the Border Patrol and others could determine whether or not they are actually the parents. In some cases, when it was determined, yes, they are a parent, and the parent said, well, listen, I'll go back to the old country, leave my kids here. They had the choice to separate that way. In some cases, they didn't have the choice. So there are many different versions of this story, but the upshot is that the current plan that's being seriously considered is that these illegal immigrants can sue for $450,000 and be given $450,000.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's going to stop more people from trying to do this.
Yeah, I mean, what incentive would they possibly... I mean, other than the $500,000.
There's that.
Other than that, why else would they want to come up here? I don't know. But I'm thinking, too, what about the people of whatever skin color, doesn't matter, the people who are living on the streets in L.A., the people who are panhandling in Phoenix, mm-hmm. the people who are, you know, American citizens really and truly hurting, they get nothing. Mm-hmm. I was going to say something else, but I won't say it. They get nothing. So some guy from Ecuador or Guatemala or Mexico, he had his feelings hurt because he decided to go back there and his children stayed here. We're going to cut him a check for $450,000?
Yeah, that does not make any sense.
When our own people,
well,
you know, our own people, American citizens who are hurting, they get zero. And foreign people who came here illegally.
Where's this money coming? It's like they're just printing it out of nothing.
It seems that way.
So
okay, here's the audio. So this is the U.S. This is the White House press conference, right?
That's right. And it's the, I just lost it. I think it's the Fox News. Is it Ducey, I think his name is? I'm probably butchering okay. the guy's name. Sorry about that.
Right. Okay.
But he's specifically asking her about this and
she's sidestepping it.
And she's sidestepping it. So this is pretty interesting. So how much, he's going to ask her, how much are we going to pay legal immigrants? Yeah.
There is a long line to get into this country legally. Is there any kind of discussion about giving people who are coming here the right way money?
Why would we be giving people who are coming here the right way money?
Why are you giving people who came here the wrong way?
I mean, but I don't understand the question. What is the,
yes,
you're
you
saying
do.
That we should give immigrants. we should give people just
yes,
money who
do.
Are coming through? I don't understand the question.
You understand
people who immigrated here illegally. Fine.
Like I said, that's the Department of Justice. That's you're going to have to ask them that question.
Okay.
He's like, I did ask them that question, and they said no comment.
No comment. Not to mention that, you know, this is the administration's policy, the policy proposal anyway, and she speaks for the administration. I mean, this is certainly her bailiwick to answer questions like that. But, you know, all this, you know, this song and dance about why I don't understand your question. Of course you understand it. you understand it, but you just don't want to answer the question. The question
there's
is...
There's no way you can answer that question and not look like
ridiculous.
A hypocrite and ridiculous.
Or a ridiculous hypocrite. Yeah, I mean, it's just absurd. Why? I mean, who's running this place that we would give $450,000 to somebody who came here illegally and got caught and they said, well, I got my feelings hurt because I had to be separated from my children? Okay, that's a bad situation. But by the way, anytime anyone is arrested for a crime, they're separated from their children. If they have children at home, and dad robs a liquor store or does something else that's a crime, the police come in and they put handcuffs on him and they separate him from his children. That's what happens when you do something illegal. You get separated from your family. It's the nature of things.
Yep. It's unfortunate and it's terrible for the children.
Sure.
That's the reality of it. It's awful. This is a terrible situation.
It is. Yeah. And I have compassion and all of the above for everyone involved. But let's face it, we separate families from their children. We separate parents from their children all the live long day, every single day, all throughout the country when somebody commits a crime. And I don't see the guy who robbed the liquor store getting $450,000 check from the government because of the emotional distress of being put in handcuffs and taken down to...
Well, he needs to get a better lawyer.
Well, these people don't even have lawyers. It's just right. The federal government saying, you know what? We're going to write you a check for about $500,000.
Well, now they can afford a lawyer, so better watch out.
Yeah, they can. Hadn't thought about that. Yeah, this check should have been twice as much, the lawyer will say.
Yep.
It's ludicrous. And I don't understand how, I mean, it's just so brazenly dumb to do this, especially, and I keep coming back to this, so forgive me for one more time here. We have a lot of people who are American citizens in our towns and cities all across the country who are dirt poor, who are barely getting by, if that, whose kids maybe are going hungry, who live in substandard living conditions, who don't have the kind of health care that they should have. And they're American citizens, and they get nothing. They get nothing. And yet we're going to write checks for $450,000 to people who snuck across the border and got caught. This is the height of lunacy. And all I can say is it's happening. It's happening.
Has everybody gone nuts around here?
There are days when I wonder, Cyrus. I mean, can you make any sense out of this? Am I missing something?
I'm scratching my head. I don't know what's going on.
And maybe that's why the White House deputy press secretary just didn't want to answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't understand the question, Patrick.
Yes, you do.
We got to make that a hotkey. Yeah. I don't understand the question.
Cyrus, did you steal that pencil?
I don't understand the question.
You don't understand the question. All right. Well, I mean, that's all I got on that story. What else can I say? It's just so brazenly stupid.
Yep.
But it's the more it goes, it seems that stuff happens. I guess I don't even want to say anything more about it because I don't have any words for it.
Yeah. What is going on? Kamala Harris has disappeared. I don't know what happened. What's her approval rating? It's like 26% or something.
I saw yesterday. I thought it was 27%.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I took that 1% away from her.
It's 10 points lower.
That's
than her
insane.
Boss.
Has it? I don't recall ever seeing a approval rating that low.
The thing that I wonder about is what is there to approve or disapprove of? She doesn't do anything. What are they approving or disapproving? Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense to me.
No.
But let's pass on from these matters.
Okay, yeah, good call.
In a moment, though, I want to take some more phone calls. I do want to play some of what Ralph Martin had to say about, of all people, Vladimir Putin. You may say, what? Ralph Martin is a leader in the Charismatic Renewal, has been for many years. He teaches theology at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit. He's a prolific writer, speaker. He's been around many years, and he's a good guy. And he's got some interesting insights on some things that are going on right now that I want to share with you. We'll do that in just a little bit. First of all, let's take a few more phone calls. Tony in Eagle River, Alaska. Welcome to the program, sir.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a question this morning regarding, so my wife Jillian and I, we are teaching classes for confirmation high school students, and the topic set for us this week is to talk about the cross.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you have any resources or anything like that we can use.
As a matter of fact, I do. I think you're going to love it. It's called The Sign of the Cross. It's a book that was written by St. Francis de Sales. The Sign of the Cross, the 15 most powerful words in the English language is the subtitle, and it is his response to a series of claims and retorts that were made by John Calvin and the Calvinists against the Catholic understanding of the cross. So here's some examples. Why now is always the right time to make the sign of the cross? That's one of the issues. So making the sign of the cross, why do we do that? Why God chooses to attach power to the sign of the cross? Why is it made on the forehead? How to convince skeptics to value and pray with it, the cross? Two uses of the sign of the cross, do you know them both? How the sign of the cross is the antidote to the mark of the devil? Errors in the claims of those who oppose making the sign of the cross? The theological significance of the motions, vertical and horizontal? Two reasons it has particular power over the enemy? Why you should make the sign of the cross publicly and often, and much, much more. So these are all aspects of this book, and it's quite good. I have it. I've profited greatly from reading it. So I would recommend that to you.
Oh, very good. That sounds like it just has so much to share. Any idea if it's available on Audible?
I don't know. But, you know, if you jump over to Amazon, they usually will tell you if there's an audio version of it. You can get it from your local Catholic bookstore if you prefer book form. But that would be my suggestion. I think you'll find it very useful.
Very good, Patrick. I appreciate you taking the call, and God bless you guys and all your work.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate that very much. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/foresters.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Ralph Martin is a professor of theology at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit, Michigan. And as I was saying earlier, he's a prolific author. He's a leader in the charismatic renewal. If you have followed the Catholic scene in the United States for the last, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years, chances are you've heard of him. So I ran across a video that he posted recently in which he's making some comments, some insightful comments, I believe, about situations involved in this case involving Vladimir Putin. And you may say, what? Vladimir Putin? Well, take a listen to this, and I'll break in here and there with a few comments of my own, but I'll let Ralph Martin lay it out for you.
Dear brothers and sisters, Ralph Martin here. I'm president of Renewal Ministries. I'd like to talk today, though, about something I really found quite startling, maybe even shocking. I read a speech that Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, gave recently, and it was recorded and posted with an English translation on a Russian government website and picked up here in the United States by the Daily Wire. And here we have the president of Russia telling us that we're trying to do something that the communists tried to do for 70 years, and it was an actual absolute disaster. And here we go. We're doing it again. It's Marxism under a different name coming into the West. So let me read what he says, and I'll offer a few comments on it, what we can do to resist it. He says, "We see with bemusement the paralysis unfolding in countries that have grown accustomed to viewing themselves as the flagships of progress, progressives. Of course, it's none of our business what's happening, the social and cultural shocks that are happening in the Western countries. Some believe that aggressively blotting out whole pages of your own history, the affirmative action in the interests of minorities, and the requirement to renounce the traditional interpretation of such basic values as mother, father, family, and the distinction between sexes are a milestone, a renewal of society." It says the overwhelming majority of Russian society rejected these new ways of thinking. The preparedness of so-called social progress believe that bringing a new conscious or a new consciousness to humanity is something more correct. But there's one thing I'd like to say. This is a little rough translation. If I were putting it into perfect English, I'd improve it, but I don't think I should. This is the transcription that was officially posted. "The recipes they come up with are nothing new. Paradoxical as it may seem, this is something we saw in Russia. It happened in our country both before and after the 1917 revolution. The Bolsheviks followed the dogmas of Marx and Engels, and they declared that they would change traditional lifestyles, the political, the economic lifestyle, as well as the very notion of morality, the basic principles for a healthy society. They were trying to destroy age-old and century-long values, revisiting the relationship between people. They were encouraging people to inform on one's own family members, on one's own spouses. It was hailed as the March of Progress.
Okay, this I just want to break in because it's obviously not my voice you're hearing there. This is Ralph Martin, professor of theology at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit. He's commenting upon a speech that was given by Vladimir Putin. And I know Vladimir Putin, doesn't he kill people? I don't know the full truth about him. I don't know what his deal is, honestly. But he is, as Ralph is reading this, the English version of his speech, he is making some very important points. You know, regardless of how you feel about Vladimir Putin, he is pointing out something that is true and important. So just so you know what you're listening to right now, let's continue.
And it was very popular across the world, and it was supported by many, as we see is happening right now. Incidentally, the Bolsheviks were absolutely intolerant of other opinions different from their own. I think this should remind you of something that's happening. And we see what is happening in the Western countries. It's with puzzlement that we see the practices Russia used to have and that we left behind. The fight for equality against discrimination turns into an aggressive dogmatism on the brink of absurdity when great authors of the past, such as Shakespeare, are no longer taught in schools and universities because they declare them as backward classics that did not understand the importance of gender or race. In Hollywood, there are rules reminding what you should do in the cinema, in the films, how many personalities and actors you've got to have, what kind of color, what sex, and sometimes it's even tighter and stricter than what the Department of Propaganda of the Soviet Communist Party Central Committee did. And the fight against racism, which is a lofty goal, turns into a new culture, cancel culture, and into reverse discrimination, racism on the obverse, and it tears people apart. Whereas the true fighters for civil rights, they were trying to eliminate those differences. I asked my colleagues to find this quote from Martin Luther King, and he said, quote, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character."
Okay, quick pause here. Notice that Vladimir Putin used to be a communist. He was in the KGB before the fall of the Soviet Union. And so he's speaking now from a position of power in the newly democratic version of Russia. And he's repudiating some of these terrible excesses that went on when he himself was a communist. So I think of all people, he would have some standing to be able to talk about what he saw go away in the Soviet Union and what is happening in the West. And by West, what he really means, I mean, I think he's talking about Europe, yeah, and Canada, yeah, but I think he's really talking about the United States. And his perspective here is an interesting one, to be sure, because in essence, what he's saying is it's history repeating itself all over again. And this time, it's not here in Russia, it's in the United States, which makes me think about Our Lady of Fatima's prediction that in the end that Russia would be converted. I wonder if this may be part of the gradual unfolding of that conversion. I don't know. But let's continue a little bit more with what Ralph Martin is sharing about a recent speech that Vladimir Putin gave.
The Bolsheviks were speaking about nationalizing not just the property, but also women. The proponents of new approaches go so far as they want to eliminate the whole notion of men and women. And those who dare say that men and women exist, and this is a biological fact, they're all but banished. Instead, we have parent number one, parent number two, or the parent that has given birth. Or instead of breast milk, you say human milk. And you say all of that so the people who are not sure of their sexual identity are not unhappy. There are some monstrous things when from a very young age, you teach to children that a boy can easily become a girl, and you impose on them this selection, this choice. You push the parents aside and make the child take this decision that could destroy their lives. And if we call a spade, this is close to being a crime against humanity, and all of that under the banner of progress. And this is happening right now. I have to tell you, I was really astounded to find this speech from Putin And I'm not canonizing Putin. I know he claims to be a Christian. I don't know what he's living it like in his personal lives. I know he's had a divorce. I know some of his government policies and some of the way he treats opponents allegedly is pretty bad. So I'm not canonizing him. But here's someone who lived through the disaster of Soviet communism and knows that we can't go back that way, and that destroying traditional values, denying traditional values, denying our culture, denying the very existence of male and female identity, imposing on children choices about gender, which is just crazy. He says this is very close to a crime against humanity, and it really is, but it's got incredible power right now.
Yeah. Okay. So there's more to it. We can get that posted. Cyrus will post that on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. A couple of things I like to say. I'd like to get your reaction to this as well, Cyrus. But the thing I find striking about this is that I keep thinking back to 1917 when the Bolshevik Revolution was going strong and Our Lady chose to appear in Fatima in Portugal, a rural out of the way place, and she appeared to three shepherd children. And what's interesting is that in her messages, she didn't say a word about the United States. She said a lot about Russia and how Russia is going to spread her errors around the world. Whole countries will be annihilated. In the end, she said that Russia will be converted. But if the Pope does not consecrate Russia to her Immaculate Heart, the terrible things would happen in the meantime. She says if Russia was not consecrated to God, it would spread errors throughout the world. Now, of course, that was something that we saw, you know, writ large all around the world. So what I find striking about this is that this message is not coming from the United States. I don't think we're capable of that message anymore, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But it's coming now from Russia. All these years later, what does this mean? It's mysterious to me. And when I consider that the United States is not mentioned in these things, but Russia is mentioned over and over and over again, there's some prophetic role that the country of Russia is playing. You notice she didn't say the Soviet Union. She said Russia. The Soviet Union is gone. Let's hope for good. Now, I'm not looking to move to Russia. I'm not looking to learn Russian. I'm not promoting Vladimir Putin. I'm not saying, yeah, the Russians are better than us. There's plenty about Russia that I don't dig. But I find this fascinating, given the Fatima apparition. What are your thoughts, Cyrus?
I'm sad. This makes me depressed that this is coming out of Russia, mm-hmm. and not out of our own country. Like these are the things that we should be talking about. But we have to look to Putin of all people. What?
Yeah.
What? We're in bizarro world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could just as easily be coming out of England or France or Spain or Italy. I'd be content with that. It doesn't have to be the United States.
But Putin?
We're not the
what's next? North Korea teaching us ethical lessons? I mean,
I bet you that North Korea does not give $450,000 to anyone trying to sneak in there. Oh, wait, nobody does try to sneak in there. But if they did, I'll bet you that Kim Jong-un is not going to write a $500,000 check to the person who tries to sneak in. Just saying that.
No, and I doubt South Korea is even giving North Koreans who are trying to sneak into South Korea.
They just give them the chop. They kill them. So yeah, I mean, I can understand exactly why you would feel somewhat demoralized by this. And look how far we have fallen. Now, I'm not saying this to be Mr. Doom and Gloom. I actually see some hope and encouragement here. Something is happening. Something mysterious, and I hope good is happening in the background here, but it's taking me by surprise because I always figured that, you know, Russia would, I always thought when I consider the Fatima prophecies that when Russia does finally convert, that it would become like the United States. Now, what I'm seeing is that if indeed we're seeing the rumblings of a conversion of Russia to Jesus, that it's becoming what the United States, in some respects, not in all, but in some respects, it's becoming what the United States used to be. how weird that is, that the United States is going in the direction. See, this is what Putin is saying. The United States is becoming like the Soviet Union used to be. Russia is becoming like what the United States used to be. Again, with broad strokes here. It doesn't exonerate all the terrible things in either country, but something strange is happening here, and I kind of like it, I guess. I don't like seeing what's happening in the United States, but I like seeing that there seems to be this prophetic movement behind the scenes in the most unexpected of ways.
Well, it's a terrible realization to be having on Veterans Day. I mean, this is...
Isn't that the truth?
This is sickening.
Well, God is at work, that's for sure. And Our Lady promised that eventually
I need your optimism. I need it.
So. Yeah, let's stay optimistic. Hope and encouragement. Well, thank you, Cyrus. Thank you, everybody. We'll get a link to that so you can watch it for yourself. Until tomorrow, please pray for me. I'll pray for you. Pray for Cyrus, too. God bless you. Yeah.